Welcome to a podcast called Least Important Things. I'm your host, Luke Ferris. Welcome to a special episode of Least Important Things. Our last episode about book covers, I talked with Meg Schmidt. She is an art director at publisher HarperCollins, and we had such a great conversation, and I learned so much that I felt like you needed to hear the whole thing because it just wasn't enough in our edited format. So this is going to be like kind of like a more typical podcast format where there's question and answer and conversation. Kind of like imagine us having, you know, a cup of lukewarm coffee. Maybe this is a lukewarm coffee chat. Maybe this is the new series title for our interview conversations. Again, thank you so much, Meg, for sharing so much about the book design, book cover industry, and all goes in to making that special moment, that 1 to 2 seconds when you're walking down a book aisle and you see that cover and you just are like, I need to read that. I need to learn more about that. Okay, enough of me. Let's get into the conversation with Meg Schmidt, art director at HarperCollins. I want to start out first. Why do you think book covers matter?
Because of course they do. I mean, oh my goodness, would you pick up a book if it was just like the title page? Like, you know, can you imagine, like, have you ever seen like those remaindered books where like the cover is just taken off? Like, I mean, everything looks the same. The way that I think about a book cover is that it's the visual thesis of the book. And so if you're not, you know, if you're not going to like understand, I mean, you're not going to care about what the cover is or what the book is, right? If you don't see that quick representation. Another way that I kind of think about it, museums talk about when the average person is going through an art museum, they will spend 3 seconds looking at each piece of art. That's in a museum, right? And maybe they'll stop if they see one they really, really like, but on average, you have 3 seconds to make an impression. So let's think about that in a bookstore where you're surrounded by tons of different, you know, like, I mean, thousands of different books, or in an online format, right? Maybe you're scrolling on Amazon or whatever your bookseller is going to be. You're scrolling faster than 3 seconds, I can tell you, right? So, I mean, how are you going to make an impression? Ultimately, I mean, less than 3 seconds really to tell you what this book is about and to tell you why you should buy it, because this is like how the engine turns, right? Like, we, even if the book could be like the best book in the entire world, but if it doesn't have a good cover on it, that can be something that will affect sales. I mean, it can get completely buried. So ultimately, what a book cover is and why it's important is because it's a tool, it's a sales tool and it's a marketing tool, but it's your first entry into a book, and it's the first part of a book that will tell you why this matters and why you should pick it up. So I think it's very important. Obviously, I'm biased.
Yes, obviously that was a leading question. I love the idea of a thesis. It's a visual thesis. So you're not writing a full thesis on the front cover, typically. So what goes into the thesis? What are like the mechanics of designing a book cover or just a book jacket or the whole entire book design?
So it really starts with, and I can walk you through like the whole pipeline from start to finish. We literally do call it a pipeline of how that all works. But ultimately, when I talk about a visual thesis for book cover, what I'm trying to say is like, is this communicating the right genre? So that can actually be really tricky with memoirs, especially with memoirs from a female perspective. Because if you put a female person on a cover, that can very quickly, if you don't show her face and if you're not doing things that make it very like this is a memoir, it can really quickly look like a novel.
Especially if they're not like, they're not Michelle Obama.
Especially if they're not, exactly. Like Michelle, oh my gosh, she's, I love
her. It's pretty easy. Like, she's recognizable, yeah. But if you're exactly. Not, if it's a memoir, it's mm-hmm. tricky.
Well, and say like there's a person who's walking away in a farm setting, you know, right? Like maybe it's a memoir. This is a book that's coming up for me. So maybe even if it was like, this is a book about a woman who's living on a farm and who's trying to find ways to approach wellness and spirituality through like farm work. If she's maybe walking away and there's some gorgeous sun rays and there's like a cornfield in the back, that can very quickly look like something that it's not supposed to be, right? So often when you're looking at memoirs, nonfiction memoirs, it's a photograph of someone who's looking you straight on Their face is taking up a lot of the cover so that you're very sure, oh, this is who this is, right? This isn't a stock image. This isn't someone who can be anyone. This is like who the book is centering on. Another thing that can often happen is if you have food on a cover or things that feel very, very domestic, like you're in a kitchen or something like that, it will really quickly start to look like a cookbook, even if it's, you know, not supposed to. So, I mean, that's another thing that we've talked about sometimes where, you know, like people just want to have like, maybe they mention how much they love a certain kind of food and that's part, maybe even in the title. Well, that can just be something that we have to work on. Like, okay, so how do we communicate instantly in those less than 3 seconds that we have? This isn't a cookbook, this is a memoir, but you should like, this is what the memoir is saying. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like those, all the different genres can blend so quickly as soon as you change one thing. Cause I was in a bookstore last weekend. I don't know if I can pull this up and show you. And you were talking about like the idea of like a woman in a field. Let me see if I can pull it up.
Well, there are a bajillion. Oh my gosh. Oh,
like, so I don't know if you can see that. This okay. one, like, mm-hmm. okay, that could be a memoir, but it's not, it's fiction.
So, and that would be the first thing I see there too. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Where she's looking up. That's for the Taylor Jenkins Reid book. That would be something we would talk about. I do think that's actually a really lovely cover. The question that we would have though is, can you see enough of her face to recognize it instantly? That's something that we would have to talk about. I worked on memoirs before where for whatever artistic reason, we've decided to show a lot of the person, but their face, like maybe we're seeing them from behind and they're looking like a profile shot. And that's always something we have to justify to our sales team, because that's part of that 3 seconds, right? Like if maybe you pick up the book because you know who the person is. So say it's Michelle Obama, right? You can't instantly see Michelle Obama's face, so you're going to miss it. Right. But sometimes artistically, there are really good reasons to do that. So, you know,
those are all the decisions you have to make that can be subtle and change a huge aspect for the message.
Absolutely. And so much collaboration with like sales and with marketing. Like you have to really justify every decision that you make like that.
Let's talk about color, because color is a huge way to stand out, but there's only a certain amount of colors in the color wheel. And we know scientifically that there's certain colors that stand out, like orange, red, blue, like they all signify feelings. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the way you use color in your work and how those colors can evoke emotion or like the thesis, going back to the mm-hmm. thesis of the book?
Yeah, for sure. There are definitely colors that I think certain designers kind of pull towards. I know that I really love blue and orange, and you can usually tell I'm designing a cover if there's a lot of blue and orange in it. And I know it's a rut that I have, but I don't care. I think it can look so beautiful. Those are complementary colors though, right? So they work really well together. Color is obviously though more than just a designer's preference. It's also contributing to the visual thesis. So if it's a darker color, like even a black or a gray, that's communicating that this is very serious, very dour. If it's like bright bubblegum pink or even like a really bright gold yellow, I mean, it's really pointing towards hope and happiness. It's more of an ivory maybe, or like a cream, maybe some sage greens. It's saying this is bright and hopeful, but there's some seriousness there. There absolutely are emotions that are tied into covers and into cover design, into any graphic design, really. One of the thing that really, there are two things that really affect for me the colors that I will think of when I go into a cover design. Because I work in a nonfiction space, many of our authors already have brands that are very well established when they come to us. Often when they come to us, they say, we are pivoting because now we are entering into a book space world. This is an opportunity for us to change that brand. So then we have some more creativity. In a lot of cases though, they say, you know, do what you want, but we do have this established brand. Please make it feel like it would fit in with that. So then like, you know, if we have an author that has an established orange or established like yellow or something like that, we'll obviously honor that. I'm not going to like literally copy and paste their branding unless that's like exactly what they want and what our sales and marketing team wants. But, you know, we can honor that in different ways. But the if that's not an issue, or even, you know, just once we've passed that kind of step, the next thing that we have, though, is how will it print? So there are different concerns. If you have a white cover, that I love white covers, I think they can look absolutely gorgeous, but those do tend to scuff a little bit more. There is some proof that like those will get a higher return rate if you have white covers, which is totally, I mean, okay. Like we always get return rates for books at a certain point. So, but that's something that I do think about. Say that we're doing a printed case. So a printed case is when there's no jacket, but there's a CMYK printing over the board. That if it has a certain kind of finish on it that maybe feels really good, but isn't as protective, then the paper can tear at the end. So if you use a lighter, in that case, it's actually good to go with a lighter color for a printed case because it's going to be a little less noticeable. But if you have like a really like dark green, you know, really dark, like evergreen book or black book or something like that, and there's even just a tiny, tiny tear, you're going to see that white and it's going to be super obvious. So colors obviously play into the design. They're a part of that visual thesis that I'm talking about, but they also are a print concern. I think the last thing I would say though, is that, you know, there are those colors that we can work with, you know, that are within, you know, our spectrum, but there are also Pantone colors. So you can actually have a lot of fun with, like, even if it's a very subtle cover, just one like burst of like a highlight Pantone color can be just absolutely make a cover sing. I mean, even if it's like a very normal paperback, you know, like you can just have a little bit of that highlight and it's really going to elevate the perceived quality of that book. So, I mean, color is just so much fun to play with, and just even subtle changes can so completely change how this book is perceived by a prospective audience. So it's really fun to play with, but you really do need to think about branding and also like, how is this going to actually print out?
Yeah, that's a whole nother aspect that you wouldn't even think about, how the color affects when you physically hold it and it tears and scuffs. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Let's talk about font and spacing and design. There's obviously a lot of trends with font. One that I've noticed is obviously more the like capitalized bold font. But again, it's like we talked about, it's genre based. Like every Revolutionary War book has that same script, old fashioned font, like in it, every single one. So tell me, like, when you have discussions with authors, how does font play in to conveying that message?
Yeah, well, I try not to actually let authors convey what font they want to pick. Sometimes they really do have a preference, but I think when I talk with an author or with, I mean, really anyone, when the role that I bring as art director into the cover design discussion is that expertise. So, I mean, when I say like, this is really the right cover, the right font for your book, there's reasons why I'm saying that. I think there are some really interesting trends that are playing out now. So we're seeing a lot of really retro 70s fonts. So those like really, those slab serifs, we're seeing those like everywhere. And what's interesting there is like, I think I would have said a few years ago that would specify a certain genre, but now I'm seeing it like everywhere. You know, I'm seeing it like nonfiction books and novels. So that is interesting, like how, you know, trends are always changing and are always developing. What I like about that trend though, is that it's a way to really have heavy bold type on a cover that isn't like heavy Helvetica. You know what I mean? So one of the things that's really influencing our cover designs, it has really changed in the last like generation of designers, is that now we're always thinking first and foremost, how does this show up online? And, you know, even, and on a phone, right? What I like about that slab serif though, is that it's an answer to that need that looks different. You can still have this really heavy font that has a lot of character to it, but it doesn't look like the same thing that we've seen now for like the past 10, 15 years. I will be interested to see how things continue to develop, you know, as trends kind of, I mean, we're always changing, right? So I wonder what the next thing will be. But another thing that we often look at with cover design is when you do handwritten type. That we see a lot, especially in weirdly, especially in memoirs, because I mean, if they're like, having a little bit of handwritten type adds like that personal, like, this is my story feel, which, you know, absolutely makes sense, but you have to be really careful with handwritten type. So often it can look very, very cutesy and very, very girly and like, you know, like a 9-year-old diary. And we don't want that. Or if it, you know, obviously if it doesn't work for the visual thesis, or if you have a repeated glyph. So one way you can tell like that there isn't, I mean, it's just a shortcut, right? That they're like, say that you have a word or a couple words that have like the same F letter. If you'll notice it, oh, that's the same exact, even though it's handwritten, you can see the copy paste kind of thing. So really good handwritten type will have different or alternate glyphs that you can use for each, for repeating glyphs. And another thing though, is of course readability, right? So a good handwritten type still needs to be really readable even from a distance, because we really need that title again to really pop. So a lot of times, I mean, usually I think fonts are kind of all just like, you know, apples and oranges, but there I think are really, when it comes to handwritten type, absolutely like this is on a higher tier, because it has those, that flexibility of glyphs and it has that readability, even if it has, you know, even if it's handwritten, as opposed to like some more free ones that you could find maybe online. So yeah, there's lots of things to think about with that.
Don't ever ask me to write any book covers, handwritten book covers, unless the demographic is 5-year-old boy, then it would be perfect, because that's what my handwriting is.
Yeah, I won't do it. I think there are some amazing, and I'm using them more and more, there are some amazing writing artists out there who can really do some beautiful custom work. And that's a really great resource for us, because they're able to do something that's so unique and won't be repeated anywhere else, while still understanding those needs and to make it legible. So yeah, I think the one other thing that I would say is, I think, you know, we can forget how important the author name is. So where the author name goes is also like just going to be so important for us. Often, when we sell books, say that they're going to be in Target or Myers or Walmart or something like that, a lot of the times those books are sold face out, which is good because we want that cover to be, you know, seen easily, but there's a lip on the bottom of the shelf, right? So if you have your author name at the bottom, that customer is maybe going to see cover, subtitle, title, all that. But if they don't see that author, then maybe that's the thing, you know, that's not good, right? So we have worked with some more celebrity authors before where the requirement has been the author name has to be on top. So, you'd just be amazed how many things, like, I mean, just, it's not just, I'm looking at, you know, Photoshop or InDesign and I'm coming up with a good design. There are so many things in the real world that are affecting how we make these designs and these decisions.
That's interesting with the author name, because I think like Stephen King is probably one of those authors where it's like Stephen King is half the cover.
Yeah, Stephen like King of, gets that.
He gets it. He got that early. One of my other favorite authors, John Le Carre, his is very obvious too, because he's more of a genre writer. So it's right up top, and that like leads with the messaging. Yeah. It's just his last name. And you know exactly, like, you're going to get a British 70s spy novel. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's what they would be saying there. And obviously I'm not in the room because I'm not working with those authors, but it's what's going to sell the book is Stephen King, you know, or the title name, right? Or the author. You're going to pick it up for that. And then the secondary thing is whatever the new title is, right? So that completely makes sense. But it's not something we would do with most newer authors.
Yeah. How was it like working with authors in that relationship? Because obviously you have like, you're the expert, you're coming in with expertise, but is every single one different, or is there kind of trends that you have to coach them on?
Yeah. I mean, so I work with a company that we have a 50-50 agreement on the cover. So everyone has to sign off on the cover, which is not typical in the publishing world. So a lot of, well, I mean, it kind of comes and goes, but in some other publishing companies, I think, especially if you're working in fiction, you really have no say. You'll just be given the cover and aren't you happy with it, right? So I really am pleased. I love one of the reasons that you would work with my company, I think, as an author, is because you get to be so closely involved. So I absolutely love that. I also have some authors like just in my family and in my friend group circles. And so I really come into it really not whenever I meet with an author, I actually do take a minute and I remind myself, like, I want to approach this writer as a creative friend, because I have seen so many authors who just have been frustrated by their cover design experience because they feel like they're not being heard. I know that you spend as an author, I mean, it can be a decade on a book, you know, or I mean, if sometimes more, this is like a part of your heart, a part of your family. And then to kind of give it to people that you don't know, and then they're going to put that visual thesis on there for a book that you've worked on for years and years and years. Oh my goodness. Like, that's a trust exercise. Like, that's a lot. So no matter who the author is, that's really where I start, that I always want to be just like, I don't know this book nearly as well as they do. And I want to respect the ideas that they have. Authors can be just the most rewarding, wonderful experience of my job, even if we disagree. So, because it's so good to like hash out ideas and hash out like, you know, maybe they'll have an idea that like, I don't exactly love, but then I can take that kernel and I can come back and I can say, so I hear you. I don't love this idea, but what about this? And that can be so rewarding and awesome. So yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think any experience with an author, I mean, really, I think as a designer, any experience with a client really is just going to be so much more rewarding and honestly also less frustrating, I think, for you as an individual, if you really approach it as like empathizing with them and what their needs are, and not making it like, I need to prove to the world that I can make an amazing cover. You know, like, that's not what's happening here. I think I said this at the beginning, really my approach is I want them to be happy. I want my sales team to be happy. I want my marketing team to be happy. And I need my print team to be happy too. So I'm merely the communication liaison, making sure that with all those voices, we can come up with the best cover that we possibly can. So yeah, I mean, all that being said, like, I mean, I have authors I text all the time, like, you know, I mean, it's just super, they're just to be in publishing, to be in this world, I think you just really have to have a love for words. And so it's just a kind of good group to be with. I'm really honored and proud of that.
When do you know that a design is done? Is it the deadline, or is like, when do you walk away from it?
Sometimes it's the deadline. I always get frustrated with that, but, the reality is like, sometimes the manuscript is late or sometimes we don't have a title until like 2 weeks before the deadline. Sometimes we just can't agree on a visual direction. The worst thing that I can hear from anyone in this whole publishing conversation is, I don't know what I like until I see it. And I hear that all the time. And that can be really that can be an exhausting next step, right? Because then it's like, but then I don't know what to give you. So it's hours of work maybe for just like, you know, and there are ways around that though. So one thing that we're introducing now is with every new project. So before I even talk to a designer, I'll create a mood board. And that mood board will have like, if it's a, let's say it's a nonfiction book about, I don't even know, like anything. We know that we don't want photographs. We want some kind of illustrative approach. Like, I can come up with color palettes. I can come up with illustrations. I can even show like, I would like to use this illustrator for this reason. So that gives something for everyone to respond to. And we'll get sign off on that mood board before we do more work on it. That being said, that will help accelerate our experience. So if we know at the start, like, this is what we really want before we go into like multiple rounds where we're just basically doing that creative work, that will help us save time. So I'm really proud of that decision and that way that we're approaching it. All that being said, often we don't get covers until like right before the deadline, in which case it's just like, those can be frustrating. There are a couple covers that I know where I'm like, I feel like we could have done slightly better, but we're making a product, right? You know, we're not making an art object. The way that I also phrase it is not if a cover is done or if a cover is good, but is it successful? So is it successful and does it capture enough attention? Does it present a good visual thesis? Is everyone happy enough? You know, then that's a successful cover. And with a high turnaround, right? I mean, you can't stop and just be like, everything has to be a work of gold, right? I mean, you have to be just like, all right, it's successful. We know that we can sell this and we're proud of it. Let's move it on because we have the five other covers that are coming down the chain.
Hey friends, taking a quick break from our conversation with Meg. If you'd like to get involved with Least Important Things, you can actually reach out to us via voicemail at www.speakpipe.com/least important things or by visiting our website at leastimportantthings.com and clicking the leave the voicemail button. You can email the show at leastimportantthings@gmail.com to reach out to me or on Instagram and Twitter at Luke H. Ferris or Least Important Things on Facebook. On our website, we have a bunch of articles about our different topics, including books, sports, television, movies. We also have a movie club called the Haddonfield Movie Club, where we're going through the foundational horror movies throughout history. If you're a scaredy cat like me, this is more of an opportunity to like take a book club format for movies. And maybe taking notes like me makes it easier to watch something scary. So get involved, read that, and let me know your thoughts. Okay, back to my conversation with Meg. Did you ever have a cover that you maybe were like, I don't know if it's going to work, and then it ended up working really well?
Oh, man, let me think about that. Man, I'm sure there has been. I mean, I've had to have worked on at least 1,000 covers by now. So, I mean, I really don't know. I think there are some covers where maybe I really didn't like an idea, but then we went with it anyway. And it was like, it's fine. Like it works. It's fine. I'll admit it. Whatever. It's fine. There's definitely, our design is so subjective, you know? So, I can have as many reasons as I want to say like, ultimately this is why I think we should go, but it's not like accounting or another field, right? Where like, you know, this is right. Or, you know, this isn't. So there absolutely are times where I think even as an art director, as a designer, you have to be like, okay, like, you know what? Yeah, this did work. Cool. Like, I've learned something. But yeah, I can't think of a specific example right now.
Oh, that's great.
No, that's because I'm always right. I'm always right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I assume you're always right. But let's talk about trends. Let's talk about trends that you like or you're seeing that I think are successful. And then we'll talk about ones that you don't like. But let's start with the good trends you're seeing. This can be across media, different, you know, styles and mediums and different genres.
Yeah. I am seeing a lot of this is like my favorite time of year because all of the best books of the year lists are coming out and it's just so fun to just like go through those. Positive trends that I'm seeing are really what will pop really well on Instagram. And part of that though is like, this is the kind of book that someone want to post about on Instagram. So they're really, really heavily, gorgeously illustrated. They're almost more art books, even if it's a novel.
You say Instagram, it could be like someone like could be like in a cityscape walking with the book or like at a cafe.
It's a book to be seen with, right? Like it's like an art object. And yeah, really beautiful use of illustrations that I'm seeing, which is, awesome, right? Because I also love seeing that because I know work has gone into it. I think one thing that I often look for in books is like how much work went into it. So like for a handwritten type, if I'm seeing like, oh, you're just repeating glyphs, right? That's not a lot of work that's gone into it. But for those really gorgeously illustrated ones, especially where type is being interwoven with the design in some way, I think that is so gorgeous.
How do you feel about the, this is Colleen Hoover. There's a couple of Colleen Hoovers, but then there's some that are not that want to look like her. And it's, how would you describe that trend? Cause you see it almost everywhere where it's
successful. I'd say it's a successful trend. You know exactly what those books are, right? You know exactly like, oh, like those are, I think they're, I saw this for 2 seconds. I bet those are like novels, romantic, like chick flick novels, geared towards millennials, maybe slightly older too. Yeah, you know exactly what those are. That's great. And you know exactly what those are also because the type is so big, right? Like, you know exactly like, oh, it's this title. Like I saw that on a screen and I'm able to just quick understand it. It's great.
And the titles are ambiguous, but you like, it's almost like if it's an ambiguous title now, like the girl on the train fad, like Big Little Lies, those trends with those names that now they're almost like a genre themselves. Yeah. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, how we would describe it as a genre, but it almost
horror, the suspense, maybe it's suspense more than horror, right?
Yeah. I guess that's like more suspense. Yeah.
Sharp objects kind of being in that, that girl on the train absolutely, I think, started a trend that continued for a while of like that kind of very dark and you see part of a face, but not all of a face. And the type went all the way down the cover. Right. And it was, with that very, very big sans serif. Yeah. I think that was a gorgeous cover clearly. Right. Cause it's, you started to see copycats.
The copycats is another thing that has come up. Like when I was at the bookstore this past weekend, just looking at it, like, I don't know if I'll be able to show this. See, this is a super professional podcast. Mm-hmm. So Where the Crawdads Sings, and then I'll show you so it has like the jacket, which has the trees. So it's like, you can tell it's someone going off into like nature with water. And then this is We Had Wings. This is just the jacket, but it's literally it's the same exact thing where it's like going off in water, trees, sunset. It's just interesting like that where you had a successful book and immediately it's duplicated. But that's business, I guess. That's the sales aspect.
I have two feelings about this because one of my first thought is like, we should all be original and we should absolutely push our books forward and like, you know, be trendsetters and absolutely, but also it's a hard world out there and we have to sell books, dude. And if we know that one book was successful and we have a book that is a comp title to that one. So basically like, if you liked Where the Crawdads Sing, you'll like this book, you know? Okay. Like, so long as you're not exactly like copying it, of course, why can't you do something that's inspired by it? Because, you know, readers who picked up that book will also pick up this one. There's safety in that, right? So yeah, I mean, I think there's absolutely a balance in like, how much do we want to push a genre forward versus, you know, how much, you know, and be on top of trends or even be trendsetters versus like understanding, all right, but we really also, I mean, our bread and butter is we got to sell books, right? So why, you know, rock the boat when we can just do something that we know is very successful? That being said, obviously you do not want to copy what has happened before. And that can be actually tricky with, sometimes that can be tricky with authors because they'll see another cover that they absolutely love and they really just want that cover. No, and that's where you have to be like, well, we can maybe take this idea, this approach, something, but we have to remix it.
Are there any trends that you like cannot stand in books like that? You're like, if an author brings it up to you, you're like, we can't do it.
I think more what I see is I see the same covers again and again and again and again. So Untamed, if you look up the book Untamed, it's a gorgeous book. Absolutely gorgeous. And I think it's a really good example of that Instagram thing that I was talking about earlier. I mean, it's stunning. It's a great, great cover. Absolutely have nothing against that cover, but I get it a lot. Like almost every author that I send, that I talk with will have that somewhere on their list. Mm-hmm. And it's great, but it's not always the right visual thesis, right? Or the right visual approach. And so I think sometimes, I don't even know if it's a bad trend. Like that cover has absolutely inspired a trend. Like you'll see, not like copycats, but you can see like, oh, right. Like they're pulling from this. And so I think it's more like, I wouldn't even say it's a bad trend. It's more just like, I don't want to get stuck there.
Yeah. You know? Cause it's wanting to iterate and have differentiation, but not go too far away from like what the author wants. That's difficult to do.
Oh yeah. And that's where, I mean, really, I say like my job really is a communications job. Right. I mean, you're so often saying like, I hear you, but also this, and let me explain why. And yes, that's a great thing. Let me go back. I mean, like it's really a communications job and making people feel heard.
All right. We're coming up here on time, but I want to hear your like Mount Rushmore of book covers. Like for you, Meg, what are the book covers that are on your shelf or you could go back to when you're even working with authors of like, okay, that's, they did it right.
Okay. So I think my favorite few covers, I don't think you can beat the Watchmen cover, like the original, that gorgeous yellow that just screams at you with like the red blotch that you're just like, what is that? It asks a question and it like, that makes you be like, what is happening? And then it continues throughout the book. I also just love Watchmen. So, I absolutely love that cover. Being Mortal by, let me see. I think I have it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. So Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. It has that blade of grass. It's a nonfiction book. It has a blade of grass as like basically the only visual. Like,
oh yes.
It is brilliant. I would love to meet the designer who came up with this because I mean, Being Mortal, I mean, it's like our lives are grass, right? And just that, and it's a clipped grass, right? It's not one that's rooted. It's, you know, like this thing is going to fade. It's stunning. And it's a perfect example of a book cover that like that book cover could have been so grim, you know, and so dour, but it doesn't feel that way. Like it feels very serious and there's obviously mortality there, but you still have like that green of life. But there's also that, like, I don't know, that's an image to dwell with, you know, that is so powerful. Similar genre kind of, but different. Mary Roach Stiff is a book that came out in the early 2000s. I love this cover. So it's, you see like the feet of a cadaver in the original one. And then there's like a toe tag and that's where the title Stiff is. So actually some of my favorite covers, and I wish I could like shout this to like all of my marketing and titling folks, is the shorter that your title is, the more creative you can be with your design. So Stiff fits on that toe tag, right? Like it's, you know, and that will really let the illustration sing. I think that just makes it look so clever. That book is also super grim, but really funny. Like it's a funny book. The kind of absurdity and oddity of that cover works so well, I think.
Like, yeah, that it's ironic. It's an ironic cover just looking at it.
Like you're looking at this dead guy's feet and you're like, what? And then it's, oh yeah. Mary Roach is stunning. She's one of my favorite authors. Another thing, you're talking about trends. One thing that's really, really messing up publishing these days is that publishing has really been affected by the supply chain issues that everyone is dealing with. So most of our printing actually used to happen in China. And China is like, just with shipping back and forth, has been just absolutely bonkers. I mean, we've had books that they've been easier to fly out actually than to ship out, which is bonkers. Like that doesn't happen. We've had books that have been sitting for weeks at a dock with like no ship to take them. Paper mills. There are, I don't know if you, maybe we talked about this in here. Britney Spears has a new book that's coming out that they're delaying the printing on because there's not enough paper to print this book. I mean, it's insane. So now we are adapting by like, we're doing more and more looking at local printers, like domestic printers in the US, some in Mexico we're looking at. Publishing is in this really interesting space right now because it really does feel like the way that things have been done for the last couple of decades is not going to switch because we just can't. The costs are just unsustainable. One of the ways that that's manifesting though is that the way that we print books, we've had to find ways to make it more cheap. So you will probably, if you go in a bookstore, you won't see a lot of foil on spines because that is extremely expensive. Whenever you put foil on a jacket or on a cover, you're paying for the entire, like where they're cutting from the foil, that die, you're paying for the entire square inch. Cause right, they can't like reuse that. It's not an ink. They're stamping out from like an actual foil. So you, if you're using foil, you really want to work to make that area, that square inch area that's going to be cut, as small as possible, because you're paying for that entire thing. So if you look at a book cover, you're probably never really going to see foil all over the jacket. Right? It's probably only on the title, or maybe even only on the author name and title. You're never going to see it on the jacket, the foil on the jacket spine. That's one thing that, like, when even when I first started publishing, that was something that was more, much more acceptable. And now that's like, I never do it anymore. Another thing though that's happening is that even jackets now are getting expensive, because you're paying for press time, right? You're paying to print the case of the book, and then also the jacket that's going to fold over it. So the more time that you pay a printer, obviously the more that your costs grow. So we were looking at ways to cut that more and more and more. And then more recently, we've been like, well, why even have the jacket? So if you go to a bookstore nowadays, I bet you are going to see a lot of what we call printed case books. What we've been finding, though, is that there are ways to make a printed case book actually look really gorgeous. And the question that we're going back and forth on is, if we want to publish a book that really, really we see as gifty, that this is a book that you're really going to get because, like, you want it, it's the Instagram book, right? You want it on your shelf. You need to have a jacket. And there are, I think, ways that you can make a printed case book, which is much more cheap, look really gorgeous just with, like, the finish that you use, like how it feels when you pick it up. If you use a raised spot gloss, which is that kind of like shiny effect that you can put on text and stuff like that, like, there are ways to make that look really, really handsome. If you do, like, I mean, there's just a million different things that you
like
can
do. Like a matte finish. Like, I feel like some of them have almost like a matte-y texture finish.
Some of them. So a matte finish, we call that, is you can either use a flat matte or a gritty matte. And a gritty matte is what I love. It feels almost like sandpaper. I love it. The other one that you can do, I just have one example here. So George Saunders, this is his A Swim in a Pond in the Rain, which I don't actually really like the cover of, but they use a soft touch and it feels kind of like soap. I don't like that as much, but there are some people who love it. So I try to go back and forth on using either gritty or soft touch. Anyway, but so we've been finding more and more that, like, it's actually, it doesn't hurt our sales. And in fact, we can make books more cheaply that look so handsome and successful just as a printed case. My favorite example of this, and this is my last, like, really beautiful cover that I absolutely love, is All These Wonders. This is an unusual, so this came out a few years ago. So they have foil all over the front. I don't know if you can see the shimmer.
Yeah, it's sparkly, it has that shine.
On the front and on the back. So, like, if you think about, like, that's so much foil for every single one of these books. I mean, that's, I could never do that, but they are doing it on a paper stock. So this isn't a CMYK printing. This is a actual stock that they have. So it feels really gorgeous and like paper. And then they have a white PMS color.
They're pulling back and simplifying, so they don't have the added cost of, and that affects with the colors.
The foil made this astronomical.
But the foil was.
This is not a good example of what I'm talking about, because it's not easy to design, but it is gorgeous and I absolutely love it. And it feels like, I mean, this feels handsome and gifty, right? Even if it's not a jacket, you don't need it. It's, and yeah, anyway, so we're doing stuff like this more and more, because it's cheaper, but also just like, it can be just really something that you just see and you want to pick off of a shelf just because of what it is. A couple more things that are really, really getting pricey these days. We getting white paper, like just not like a normal cream, that's getting super expensive. So we're seeing less and less of that. Custom end sheets, like, so when you pick up a book, let me see. Yeah. So when you pick up a book, the inside, right? Sometimes you see a design like here, we almost never do that anymore because that's an added cost. So yeah, I mean, it's a really changing industry because of what's going on, but it's interesting to see like the creativity that's going around making all that work. You know, like, I think some of the best designs kind of happen when you're kind of in a box and you have to figure out what to do in that box, and the box is changing. So it's interesting to see how we're adapting to it.
We Least Important Things is a podcast about the most important of the least important things in pop culture and entertainment. It's hosted and created by me, Luke Ferris, and executive produced by Jay Ferris. Logo and brand design by Curtis Felton. Thanks again to Meg Schmidt. If you actually didn't hear her on our previous episode about book covers, go ahead and take a listen to that and get our full episode catalog wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get them, you can listen to them there. And until next time, thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon.